Welcome to the Cool Tools Show. I'm Mark Frauenfelder, Editor-in-Chief of Cool Tools, a website of tool recommendations written by our readers. You can find us at cool-tools.org. I'm joined by my co-host, Kevin Kelly, founder of Cool Tools. Hey, Kevin.
Hey, it's great to be here.
In each episode of the Cool Tools Show, Kevin and I talk to a guest about some of his or her favorite uncommon and uncommonly good tools they think others should know about. Our guest this week is Jessica Leahy. Jess writes about education, parenting, and child welfare for The Atlantic, The Washington Post, and The New York Times. She's the author of the New York Times bestselling book, The Gift of Failure, How the Best Parents Learn to Let Go So Their Children Can Succeed. She co-hosts the popular Hashtag M Writing podcast with KJ Delantonia and Sarah Bowen. She lives in Vermont with her husband and two sons, and her second book, The Addiction Inoculation, Raising Healthy Kids in a Culture of Dependence, will be released in April of 2021. Hey, Jess, how are you?
I am doing great, as well as things can be.
Yes. It's so wonderful to have you join us in this period of remote joining.
I've been looking forward to it. Anything to break the monotony of the at-home schedule with everyone in the house.
Right. Definitely. Well, thank you so much for taking some time out of your lockdown to talk with us. You have a few tools that you want to talk about, and one of them has been recommended by people before, because they're writers, but we'd love to get your take on it and how you use it. It's called Scrivener.
Yeah, since I discovered Scrivener, it's been impossible for me to go back. I actually have to use a couple of different programs for writing simply because Scrivener and compatibility issues with my editor and my agent, mm-hmm. things like that. But Scrivener is amazing for me because I'm a nonfiction writer and I do a lot of research, and I can create folders for every one of my chapters, and I can dump all my research in there, and I can dump images in there. And I can dump anything I want into those folders. And within those folders, I can have like the main text and the things that I delete and fragments and quotes and all kinds of stuff. And then when I compile all of that, I usually transfer it into Microsoft Word just for compatibility issues. But Scrivener has really changed the way I write and helped me become a much more organized writer. And it's inexpensive. It's inexpensive. That's the best part.
Yeah, it's like it's instead of a monthly fee, it's just a flat fee.
Yeah.
And I've also found that these folders, like you said, the being able to dump research in, it has not like coughed back anything that I've thrown at it yet. It'll take like YouTube videos, audio recordings, yeah. PDFs. It will happily accept anything. And then it's all just there for you. That's like so convenient.
It also doesn't let you throw things away permanently. It puts things into the trash, but it never really gets rid of them. So if you have second thoughts about dumping anything, you can always go back down to the trash and it's always going to be there.
When you are doing research, let's say you're doing online research, do you save to Scrivener directly, or do you save to something like Evernote or something else and then move it from there?
Yeah, I have a really weird, this is what works for me, but I have a big folder of my PDFs of like journal articles and things like that. And then they're all arranged in a huge folder by lots of smaller folders by topic. So my book, The Addiction Inoculation, has, I don't know, something like 50 different folders. And it's everything from genetics to different approaches to substance abuse, everything I can possibly think of topic wise is in there, and then I can just go and find it there. So Scrivener holds on to the chapter specific stuff. Like if I know I'm going to use an article in a given chapter, I always dump that in there. But the nice thing for me is it takes such a long time to do the research that I'm taking so many notes. So it's really helpful for me to have a folder for a given chapter that's about a given topic, so that all these little fragments that might otherwise get lost can end up in there. I even, type in what's on the post-it notes all over my desk sometimes, just so I can keep everything all in one place.
So what I meant was when you're researching online at a website, do you save that page?
Yeah.
Directly to Scrivener, or do you bookmark it first, or do you save it to Evernote and then move it to Scrivener?
Yeah, that's the one hitch in my plan. I usually print it as a PDF. I mean, I know it's an antiquated way to do things, but I'll often just say print PDF, stick that in the research files as well.
Okay. So you print out the web page.
I do.
But not like on paper. You just print it as a
save it as a PDF.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. And I have used Evernote in the past, but I never got fluent enough with it. It was totally a failing on my side, not Evernote's side, because my husband is a researcher too, and he uses Evernote and loves it. I just have never gotten fluent enough with it to use it in a way that's efficient.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
That's interesting. How about using split screen in Scrivener? For me, that's like such a great thing to do, where you have like an interview transcript on one side and then your manuscript on the other.
Oh my gosh, it's the best. It is the best. When someone told me about it, and there are a few things that I've, you know, I'm definitely not a high-end Scrivener user. I sort of stumble my way through and then realize, oh, they probably have a smarter way to do this than the way I've been doing it. But that split screen, I'm very heavy on interviews, and I have the transcript on one side and the contents of the chapter on the other. And that's been huge for me. The other thing I really love is when I read Dreyer's English, I don't know if you've had a chance to read Dreyer's English by Benjamin Dreyer. He talks about certain words that appear, he's a copy editor, and he talks about certain words that appear too much in people's writing and words that we should be getting rid of. And Scrivener will allow you to do a frequency search for words. It'll show you what words you use too much. I have in my first book, I use the word particularly way too much. And so I will do searches on those words that I know I have a tendency to overuse and find them and get rid of as many as I can. So that's another fun way, a little fun tool from Scrivener.
And that's great. And that's a great tip. Dreyer's English, an utterly correct guide to clarity and style. That is
him on Twitter too, because Benjamin Dreyer on Twitter is a fantastic follow. But that is one of the books that stays close to me all the time in terms of, you know, it's a reference for me and a reminder that writing stuff and the rules can be actually really fun.
And there's the classic elements of style. Is this superior to that in some ways?
It's different. I have a wide range of references I go back to a lot. And since Dreyer's English came out, that's one I go back to a lot, but more just to sort of make me think about my writing and my approach and the way things that save me from having to be embarrassed when my copy editor goes through things.
Okay.
I have a question for you, Jess, about Scrivener. Something that I have struggled with and have not found an answer to is dealing with footnotes and citations.
Yeah.
It doesn't seem like it's built in or something. They're asking you to like add a template or something. What's the deal with that? Have you figured out a solution?
I am still working through a solution. My husband has promised to help me on my next book project to make sure I don't do a lot of redundant work, but I use bookends. So bookends for me, it's not seamless with Scrivener. Mm-hmm. I did have to go back and redo, you know, look through some stuff and manually fix some things. But bookends is my citations manager, and that has really saved me. When I had to do my bibliography, oh my gosh, it was a dream. I just, you know, they said, what style do you want it in? I said Chicago, because HarperCollins uses Chicago. And there you are. There's your bibliography. It was a miracle. It was wonderful. But you have to do some searching online to find the right way to make Scrivener and bookends play together really well.
Okay.
But is it like a plugin? Is it
bookends?
You're using bookends while you have Scrivener open?
I do. So bookends is there as a way for me to research and pull resources in, research pieces in, as, you know, for my works, my works cited list, my bibliography. But I also use it as my I use EndNotes. And actually, HarperCollins, for example, uses this thing called key phrase call out, where you'll list, you know, give a sentence and then give the reference for that sentence that you had in the text. And so what I'll do is just drag my citation from bookends straight into my Scrivener document and drop it at the end of that sentence, and I'll know what reference that footnote goes to.
So I was using EndNotes, and you mentioned you were using EndNotes too. So are you using EndNotes and bookends, or does bookends replace EndNotes?
No, I'm just using bookends. And I think at some point in the past, I had said endnotes, and I meant bookends.
Oh, okay. I see. Okay.
Yeah, sorry. It's bookends.
Oh, no, that's fine. Bookends. Okay. So it is bookends, Sony Software. Is that the company that makes it?
I think so. Okay. Yeah, there are big fights in my family. We have three researchers in the family, and one of them, my college student, uses something different, and so we have these battles over the best citation manager. It is super dorky around here.
Sounds like my kind of place. My wife's a copy editor too, so that's great.
Then she will really enjoy Dreyer's English.
In fact, I just texted her and I said this book comes highly recommended. You should buy a copy. So she probably has already. That's great. So, okay. So moving on, this sounds super nerdy too, but pretty cool. Some kind of sticky notes that come like in a little wallet or something.
Yeah. So the day after I handed in my manuscript for my first book, The Gift of Failure, I had been helping train a horse, and I was thrown from that horse and landed on my head and suffered a pretty bad head injury. And while there, I couldn't really read, especially off of a screen. I couldn't do any screen stuff at all. So since then, I've had to really rely heavily on paper, which is, I guess, one of the other reasons I tend to save things as PDFs, so that if I need them, I can have them in my hand. It's really hard for me to spend a lot of time on the screen, so I save it for work stuff. So if I'm going to listen to a book or read something online, I'm also almost always going to have the hard copy. And so I have these notes by Semicolon, S-E-M-I-K-O-L-O-N, and it's 12 different colors of sticky tabs. I'm a huge fan of sticky tabs. I can't read anything without sticky tabs, but having 12 different colors allows me to do something really cool, which is anytime I read a book, I pick three colors. One color gets used very rarely, and that's like, alert, alert, come back to this, use this, this is important. And then the other two colors, one is for, you should read more about this, and the other one is, this should probably go in the book. So that way, no matter what book I have, they may all have different colors sticky tabs, but I can sort of sense what the three colors mean. And so if you look at any of my books, most of them have just an obscene number of sticky tabs in them. The other cool things about this brand is they really do stick and they don't come out. A lot of brands of sticky notes just fall out over time, or my cat will pull on them and bite them out of the book, and these actually stay put where they're supposed to. So I have packages of these everywhere. They're in my car, they're in my bag, they're in my suitcase, they're in my desk and my bedside table. And the joke around here is I can't read without a pen and my sticky tabs.
They look to be transparent also.
They're semi-transparent. You can write on the outside of the end that sticks out of the book with Sharpie. It doesn't work very well with like ballpoint pen, but I'll occasionally put like a cue for quote if I want to remember which color goes with which sort of use I'm giving them in a given book.
And the holder in which these are, is it like a wallet that you open up and then...
It's just cardboard and... You know, if they start to lose their stickiness sticking in the cardboard thing, sometimes I'll actually just remove three of the colors and carry them with me in a little packet. But the nice thing about these is that it's pretty durable and they're easy to carry around with you. I love them. I don't know what I'll do if they stop selling them.
Well, there's Post-it has versions of these in colors, and they often are in little kind of the little container where they flip up, or I don't know
like
how to describe it.
Almost like a Kleenex dispenser or something.
Yeah, exactly. They, when you take one out, the next one appears.
Fanfold.
I liked those for a long time, and then I discovered these, and I like these better.
Cool.
Okay.
Jess, I just had a kind of a side question. You mentioned a head injury.
Yeah.
One of my colleagues at Institute for the Future, I work with her name's Jane McGonigal. She wrote a book called Super Better.
Mm-hmm.
Have you read that book?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I imagine
it's in my bookshelves. Yep.
Yeah, that had she had a similar concussion and really like was I think she just like bumped her head on a kitchen cabinet or something, but it like caused a lot of problems for her.
It was really hard. I had just gotten a biweekly column at the New York Times too. And I had to dictate the first couple columns to my husband, and he wrote, I told him what to type because I couldn't look at a screen at all, and I couldn't. It was really bad. It was just, and it gave me a lot of, I've been a teacher for 20 years, and it gave me a lot of patience with my students who have concussions. And then I'm really eager for them to just sort of get over it and get back to work. But it took me months to get better from my concussion. Wow. And I still have issues with, just little issues with visual migraines and my eyesight sometimes.
Wow. Well, glad that you are doing a lot better than you were before.
Do you wear a helmet now with a horse?
I was wearing a helmet when that happened. Wow. Okay. I actually had to stop. I've stopped downhill skiing. I just don't do a lot of things where I can really hurt my head badly. You know, I need it. I need my head. Smart. I need my brain.
Yeah, I need my brain and my eyes.
I don't horseback ride as much either. We used to take these horses that, you know, no one else wanted, and then we would train them and resell them. And that's not something I do much anymore. Mm-hmm.
So tell us about your next cool tool. We're back to our eyes and screens, I think.
Yeah.
This is a monitor that you like.
It looks so cool.
It is super cool. Wow. So I had just a regular Thunderbolt Mac monitor for a long time, which was great. I really did like that monitor, but it got dropped during our move, and our moving company was replacing my monitor. And so for a very similar cost, I was able to get this LG ultra wide curved monitor. And the reason I like it so much is not just because it looks super cool, but because I can have many documents up at once and line them up. And I can have a PDF of an article. I can have I can have an interview. I can have my text and all lined up, you know. And then it's what's really hard about that then is if I'm traveling and I have to just use my laptop, I feel like I'm looking at a, you know, a tiny, tiny little screen, and I can only see one thing at a time. But this big monitor has really changed the way, it's made it so much easier for me to work between documents. And it's a huge splurge, but it's also, I love that monitor so much.
And do you happen to know the dimensions? We say it's ultra wide, but I'm just curious.
It is ultra wide. It's 38 inches diagonally. So it's a big wide monitor, but something about the curve also makes it it's been really a lot easier on my eyes. I know I don't seem to get as much eye strain when I use that monitor as when I use, for example, my laptop.
Wow, it looks great. So it's about $1,000, $1,050.
Yeah, it's a really expensive monitor. Yeah.
You're a writer. You're in front of it all day, every day.
Yeah.
You know, when something like that, you know, money becomes like less of an issue, and it's like, how is it helping you get your job done is the most important
thing. Because I travel so much, it made sense to have a monitor that I could plug into with my laptop, because the laptop goes with me everywhere. That is my office is my laptop. So, it just made sense for me to have a plug-in monitor. And actually the broken monitor is still being used. My son does, electronic digital music, and he has my cracked monitor up in his room as his as his monitor. So we're getting as much use as possible out of these expensive monitors.
Cool. I'm going to just put in a quick plug for a utility that I use with my Mac called Divvy, D-I-V-V-Y, and it's a way to, like, you kind of establish a grid, and then just using keyboard commands, you can like make windows snap into those. So I kind of have a routine, and the windows just pop into that grid. So I have, you know, a website, you know, my browser in one window. Mm-hmm. I'll have my Signal app in another one, and it just is a nice way to keep things tidy.
For me, the big monitor, mostly for me, is, you know, a couple of documents, and then the bookends. The citation manager has to almost always be up at the same time too, and that's been. Having them right there is an incredible luxury.
Makes all the difference.
Yeah.
And so you'll have maybe, let's say, Mark, five or six or just even five or six different applications all showing on your screen at one time. And rather than being behind each other, you'll have them kind of laid out on a grid.
Exactly.
That's cool.
Yeah, it's really
nice. That's really cool.
Usually, for me, it's more like three because I don't have that big of a monitor, but boy, am I tempted to get this LG one that you're talking about. Yes. But yeah, I usually it's like three that I have going.
Right. We had one of our guests was talking about how he took the like 4K, like 52 inch TVs and turned them into monitors.
Yeah.
It's like, I don't think you can have too much space on your screen.
I will also say this curved monitor, if I'm in my office like cleaning or something and I put a movie on, boy, it looks really pretty on that monitor too. It's a really, I mean, I'm using it for text, but boy, it actually looks good when you use it for the stuff it's supposed to be used for.
Yeah.
That sounds great. So I'm moving down the list. You have a paper monthly planner. I'm interested in hearing why you like paper planners.
Yeah. Okay. So I have, I host a podcast called the hashtag AmWriting Podcast, and I have two co-hosts, Serena Bowen, who's a best-selling romance author, and KJ Delantonia, who actually used to be my editor at the New York Times. And we all have the same planner. And the reason we love this one is that it has a monthly calendar in the front so that you can sort of plan out, you know, plan out your month, and there's weekly planners in there too. But the main reason we love it is that for the three of us, we text each other all day long, and we text each other the word sticker when we've achieved our goal for the day. And then we actually put a sticker. I mean, it's like we're 10 years old. We have an actual sticker in the day. So right now my stickers are bumblebees, and I can tell which days I actually achieved, whether it's a word count goal or a research goal or an editing goal. But whatever it is we've set as our goal for that day, once we've done it, we get a sticker in our book and we text each other the word sticker. And it really, you know, if I hit 9 o'clock at night and I'm like, man, I'm tired and I didn't sticker today, but one of my friends, Serena or KJ, texts me and tells me that they stickered, I'm going to be really likely to just stay up for like 45 more minutes and get my work done. And then the other thing I do is I use, I have a little key system where I use washi tape in various colors to make like a little tab. And I segment the 88 pages of blank pages, or they're actually a dot grid, so that I have sections to my notebook. And it's not a full on like bullet journal. It's just a way to organize, to have my calendar and to have all my notes for the various projects I'm working on all in one place. And, so when we, every single year, this is the gift that we, you know, the calendar itself is the gift that Serena gives us each year. And then I gave them the thing that we stick our notebook in, which is a trifold, beautiful leather trifold, piece of art, really, by a woman named Lesha Shaver. And she makes them at this place called Little Mountain Bindery in Arkansas. And I was at this beautiful museum in Fayetteville, in Bentonville, Arkansas, actually, I think, or Fayetteville, I can't remember which, called Crystal Bridges Museum. It's a museum of American art, and they had one for sale there, and I bought it. And so since then, if I have to buy a really, really beautiful, elegant gift for someone, I buy them this trifold fillion, F-I-L-L-I-O-N, and I have their initials embossed on it. And that's the gift I give people who I really want to give something nice to. And the calendar fits into it perfectly.
So the calendar, do you also have like a Google Calendar that you're running as well?
Yeah, I do. This is really more for writing. This is really more for, this is not like all of my, you know, you guys do happen to be there as an appointment for today, but really this is about like, what did I work on today? Did I achieve my writing goals? In fact, there's an extra day at the end of the week, just to sort of list my goals for the entire week. I'll send you a picture of what this month looks like. It helps me keep, I think it harkens back to my teaching days, because we used to give all the students at my school these planners. And at the end of each week, there was a little space to put their weekly and monthly goals. And that's what I still do for myself, so that I can sort of keep an eye on where I need to be in a given week.
Sure. So, I mean, I like the idea of, you know, kind of having a calendar and having your to-do list, so to speak, on paper. Mm-hmm. But the advantage came with being able to share that with people I'm working with, my family, right, and everybody. And yep, that was so powerful, that being able to have that shared calendar was so powerful that the other part of this kind of intimate side of it went away. And it sounds like the way you do it is you do both.
Yeah, this calendar is really just for me. It's not for anyone else. And it's about my work and my personal goals. And the nice thing about that is because the other 88 pages of this notebook are, you know, notes about given projects and things I'm currently working on, you know, I keep this thing and I can look back. In fact, once a year on the podcast, we talk about the goals that we set at the beginning of the year and a word that we sort of, that encapsulates sort of what we want to do that year. And all I have to do is flip to that page in my calendar / journal or whatever you want to call it. And I have my 2020 goals and my 2020 word and the things I wanted to achieve. So when we do sort of check-ins and a roundup at the end of the year about how we've done on our goals, there it is. I just have to turn to that page. So this is very, very much for me. And we do the Google Calendar for the family and with my assistant and all that kind of stuff. But this is just me.
Wow. Okay.
And I use pretty markers and I use stickers and I use washi tape. And, you know, I'm not one of those people that goes crazy and has some, like, you know, thing that could be framed. It's definitely pretty messy, but it's also a place for me to keep my thoughts straight.
That's good. It's like a centering and organizing ritual.
Yeah, exactly.
I love it. We have a couple of minutes left. So why don't we talk about the book that you wrote, The Gift of Failure. What is the book about? Who is it for?
So it's really for, I guess the most of the speaking I do around that book is for parents, teachers, coaches, that kind of thing. Anyone who works with kids and anyone who wants to try to get kids motivated to do stuff for the sake of the thing itself, to get a little less reliant on, you know, extrinsic motivators like, you know, trophies, grades, points, scores, or stickers, I guess. But it's also about how kids learn, how we can work with that to keep them motivated, and about not helicopter parenting, really, was the original genesis of that book. I realized that I was angry with the parents of my students for, you know, parenting their kids into a state of helplessness. And yet I was doing the exact same thing with my own kids. So that's how that book was born. And it's been a really fun ride. I've been speaking on topics around that book for the past 6 years or so.
So a question I like to ask with books that have at least a little bit of a time period since you've written them, I guess this would be almost 5 years ago. Have you changed your mind anything about anything that you wrote about? Would you write anything differently if you were to write a book today?
I think I would add, there's been some really great research recently on the unfair benefit that parents who helicopter and have a lot of sort of are in a position of privilege to force schools to do things for them that they don't do for other kids. It creates a real inequality in schools. And that was not something I explored in the book when I wrote it, but the research has come out only in the last year or so, looking at the amount of rule bending that happens when parents come in and sort of hit their fist on the desk, on the headmaster's desk and say, or the principal's desk and say, you know, you're going to make this work for my child, that kind of thing. And it's created a, you know, a really unequal space in school. And I think that would be something I would love to go back, but I couldn't have done it at the time because the research wasn't there.
Mm-hmm. That's really interesting. And I think just anecdotally, I've seen lots of instances of that.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
So the addiction inoculation is your next book that's coming out next year. And what was it that inspired you to write a book about addiction?
Well, I'm an alcoholic. I have almost 7 years of recovery. And I used to work for 5 years. I taught in an inpatient drug and alcohol rehab for kids. So I was their writing and English teacher and working with those kids. And I have two kids of my own. So I have two kids of my own who with a genetic predisposition to substance abuse. And I grew up in a family with substance abuse on, you know, all the branches of my family tree. My husband has substance abuse in his family. So I really just wanted a book to figure out what I can and can't control in my child's risk for substance abuse. And there wasn't a book out there that did exactly that for me. And I also wanted to know what works in schools, what programs really do work to educate kids around substance abuse and give them the tools they need to resist it as much as possible. Essentially, if we have all these risk factors, how do we protect kids as much as possible?
Are you comfortable extending the addiction metaphor to screens?
So yes, there's a slightly yes and no. There are some slightly different mechanisms going on there. And it's really tech is not as much something that I'm interested in. And so I didn't really go into that as much as I thought I was going to. And there's some other really wonderful books out there like Glow Kids and Screenwise and a bunch of other books that I really, The New Childhood by Jordan Shapiro. There are a bunch of books out there that do a really good job with that.
So somewhat, but not exactly.
Yeah, I mean, there are certainly people who create video games definitely know how to sort of get that nice balance of challenge. There's a lot of great lessons there for learning as well and how kids learn to hook you into wanting just a little more and just a little more. And they all work on the same receptors in the brain. You know, that dopamine rush is what fuels us and motivates us to want more, more, more. So there definitely is an overlap. And some of the most interesting research on screen addiction and gaming addiction is coming out of places with the biggest gaming or e-game industries like e-sports industries like Korea and China. So there's some really cool, interesting research coming out now. Not a lot to draw great conclusions yet, though.
Okay.
Jessica, where should people go if they want to find out more about you, your podcasts, your, where they can find out more about your books, all that kind of stuff? I imagine you have a website for that.
I thought it was the law now. Everybody has to have a website. Isn't that right? You can find everything at jessicalahey.com. There's a page there for the website, for the podcast, for the hashtag GamWriting Podcast. And I spend, social media-wise, I spend a lot of my time over on Twitter because as a profession, teachers are one of the largest users of Twitter. So I follow about 12,000 teachers on Twitter. And so when people say, oh man, Twitter, isn't that a horrible place to be? I say, heck no. It is the most positive, supportive, amazing social media platform. I absolutely love it. That's where my hashtag PLN, my personal learning network, that's where it is.
I hate to kind of introduce a tool at this very end of this, but do you have any tools that you use on Twitter that help you use Twitter?
TweetDeck. Yeah, I use TweetDeck. I use TweetDeck to be able to schedule tweets throughout the day. I used to use Meet Edgar, but I use TweetDeck. And I just like it because if there's an education chat going on, like a hashtag SatChat is the big Saturday morning education chat, I can have that just running in a column and see what's going on. Plus, I keep columns I have a lot of lists. So I keep columns for like entertainment and education and, addiction, all that kind of stuff. So I have various columns for various topics.
Cool.
Very cool.
Well, thank you.
Jessica, this has been a blast talking to you. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I love talking about tools. Love it.
Oh, good. We do
that
too.
Was fun. Well, we would love to have you back on again to talk about more tools.
Yeah. Well, given that my release from writing, the thing I do when I'm not writing is gardening and yard stuff.
Oh,
I have
wow.
a whole other list of tools for that.
Right. Well,
so.
look forward to that.
Hey, everybody. It's your host, Mark, and I wanted to thank you for listening to the Cool Tools Show. And I also wanted to let you know that we've got a lot more going on at Cool Tools than just this podcast. We also have the Cool Tools website, which has a new tool review every day, and you can get there by going to cool-tools.org. We also have four different newsletters that you can subscribe to, and you can subscribe to those from the Cool Tools page. We have this podcast that you're listening to right now. We also have a YouTube channel where we review tools. Check that YouTube channel out by going to youtube.com/cooltools. And one of the things I'd like to ask you is, if you're really enjoying everything that we are producing, go to our Patreon page and support us there. You can sign up and give us as little as $1 a month, and that would mean a lot to us. The money that we get from Patreon goes towards a lot of things. We transcribe our podcast interviews so that you can read them online. We pay for editing of our podcasts and for our videos. We pay our contributors. We have video production costs. We have equipment costs. We have hosting costs. And the money you give us through Patreon also goes to support Cool Tools Lab. Anything you give is a huge help. And one of the things that we do is, if you are a contributor to Patreon, we'll give you a shout out on air. And so I have a few people here to thank this week. Mark Lyonaj, Micah Gates, Monty Zukowski, Patrick James McNally, Robert Cohen, Scott, Spence Lloyd, Steve Avery, Steve Golden, Steve Levine, Tom Hess, William Phillips, Aaron Nipper, Dharab Patel, Glenn Mercer, Jay Walker, Jeff Bonaire, Ryan Jarrell, Pat Daly, Patrick Kennedy, Troy Wallett, Mike Camerate, Nicole Harkin, Tim Youssef, Scott Reed. Thanks all of you for supporting Cool Tools. And if you would like to have a shout out, go over to the Patreon page and sign up. And thanks for listening to the Cool Tools podcast. We'll see you next week.